This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hey y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
All right, I'm Jason Whitlock. He's Marcellus Wiley. He survived. That dude!
Yes, sir.
All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself, the most fearless show in sports. But we start today with Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo's first football game in nearly a year made me think of two things. One, 70% of all lottery winners file bankruptcy, and half say they're no more happy after the financial windfall. Two, the notorious B.I.G. song, Mo Money, Mo Problems, is the most prophetic song in the history of rap music.
Really?
18 months ago, the notorious Jimmy G hit the NFL lottery. He parlayed a five-game winning streak at the end of the 2017 season into a five-year contract that momentarily made him the highest paid player in the league.
Most.
He signed the deal in February of 2018. In July, just 5 months after inking a deal that paid him $27.5 million per year, TMZ spotted Jimmy in Beverly Hills on a date with a porn star.
Yeah.
You say, so what? He can date who he wants.
Damn
it's not
right.
Our business.
Damn right.
I said then, and I say now, Jimmy D String's choice of public companion tells us something about his personality that might make him unfit to be a franchise quarterback. He doesn't understand or take seriously all the responsibilities that go along with being the face of an NFL franchise. You give someone like that a $137 million contract, and there's a damn good chance you'll live to regret it. I don't want to make too much of one awful preseason game, particularly the first game he's played since injuring his knee in September. But last night against the Broncos, Jimmy G completed just one of six passes for 0 yards, and he tossed an interception. His passer rating was 0.0. Last week, we heard reports that in practice, Garoppolo threw five straight interceptions. Last week, informed NFL reporters started pointing out the 49ers could easily get out from underneath Garoppolo's contract at the conclusion of this season. Our own Peter Schrager mentioned how much San Francisco coach Kyle Shanahan likes backup quarterback Nicky Mullins. You know what Garoppolo said after TMZ called him cavorting with a porn star?
What? It is a good learning experience. Just have to take it in stride. I mean, it is what it is.
You know what Garoppolo said last night after his pitiful performance?
It is what it is, the preseason right now, so just got to take it in stride.
You know what Garoppolo said after Japan bombed Pearl Harbor?
Stop.
It's just a tiny island. We have to take it in stride. He said the same damn thing after John Wilkes Booth shot Lincoln. Take it in stride. You know why lottery winners go bankrupt? Because they don't understand the meaning of more money, more problems. They think they can take everything in stride after hitting the lottery. Jimmy G, the more money you come across, the more interceptions we see. Joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analyst Mark Schlereth and James Harrison, a future Hall of Famer. Marcellus, we'll start with you.
Yeah.
Time to worry about Jimmy G as a franchise quarterback.
Time to worry? Not enough good evidence out there for us not to panic. I mean, if you think about who he is, you don't even know what that is. He's not played a full NFL season, even though you would try to combine and extrapolate three seasons of performance to get to almost half of a real regular season game. The deal was premature, which set absurd expectations for a player who we don't know who he is. And I'm the eternal optimist. I always like to think up for a player, especially with his talent and skill set. Mm-hmm. But I'm voting this down. If you ask me, is it time to panic? I don't even know where we got those expectations. Where we got those expectations based on his body of work to think that he was going to be greater than what we're seeing right now. Let's talk about when he returned after he won the 5 games in San Francisco, came back before the injury. 59% completion percentage, sacked 13 times, roller coaster ride before injury. So I think everything about his career so far has been premature, and it's time for us to panic if you ever had those great expectations of him.
I don't think it's time to panic. I think you had a situation where, I mean, he was being pressured like crazy. I mean, he didn't have a clean pocket. And then the knee. The knee is a bigger problem than what he's making it out to be. You can see as he was jittering through the pocket in a couple of those plays, he's not fully confident in that, no matter what he says. This hasn't been a full year yet. You're talking about a major, major surgery injury. So I don't think it's time to panic yet. Maybe if we get deeper into the season and he still hasn't come around, it's time to panic. But right now, you have injury, and it's the preseason. I remember when I played for the Steelers. Like, we had a horrible game. These boys ran the ball all up and down the field in Buffalo. Couldn't believe it. We still ended up being number one defense. So it's the preseason. I wouldn't panic. That's just my opinion.
Here's the thing, and I agree with you. I think there's a couple of things. Anytime you're coming off an injury, you have to set an expectation for yourself. It's not the physical part that's hard to come over or get over after an injury. It's the mental part. It's from the neck up. And so you have to reestablish whatever my 100% is. Like, I may be 80% of what I used to be, but that's my new 100%. And I've got to be okay with going out there and performing with my new 100% level. That the only way you learn how to do that is by doing it. You can talk about it, but you cannot get comfortable playing after an injury until you've played after that injury. So this was the first step in becoming comfortable. You're right. He was pressured on all those plays. He got two balls tipped at the line of scrimmage. So he had a couple of those things that went down. Here's the other thing. There is no game planning going on right now. And if you look at Kyle Shanahan is a great game planner. Matt Ryan won an MVP when Kyle Shanahan was the coordinator, because not only the game plan, but he gets to play in with about 25 seconds left. And so he's talking to the quarterback all the way till the play clock shuts off and tells you, hey, this is what they're in. This is what we're going to do. You're not doing that right now. So I would just tell you to pump the brakes. Mm-hmm. I think Jimmy G is going to be fine. There's no question he's got a great skill set, and he's got a great coach to take him along that path. So for everybody that's hitting the panic button, I would say stop right now and let it play out.
The only thing I'll say, everybody's playing preseason football right now, and I'm seeing Daniel Jones complete passes. I'm seeing Dak complete passes.
He got the injury now, and he got live bullets now. It's not practice anymore. It's not, you know, no one's going to fall into your knee. You know, the last play that you saw, he got hit on the back and actually stumbled on his front.
Well, you don't have the body of work to give him the benefit of the doubt. And you also can't start his career with a reference point post-injury, because the expectations are so great because of that contract. If he continues on this trajectory, and I know it's the preseason, I get it, but when you don't have a body of work,
you're panicking after one preseason game.
No, I forget. Before he got hurt,
okay,
people were like, was that the right deal? Then he gets hurt, so we pause that. Okay. Now, bad practice performances. Who cares? Then it turns.
Really?
No, I say who cares until they translate into the game.
Okay.
And then it's like, okay, and now you have this contract. The elephant in the room is, we have you on a team-friendly deal. The Kaepernick deal, which it sounds great in big numbers, but if you dive into those details, a lot of exit strategies for the team.
Okay.
So if he doesn't step up, injury or not, you know how the game is.
No question.
This is going to be one and done.
Which is fine. I will tell you this. You know, the report on the practice situation. I sat, like you and I are sitting right here, and talked to John Lynch on Friday, general manager of the San Francisco 49ers. What's that?
No, perfect. Yeah, this is great.
Yeah, I sat and talked to him. He said he's been great in camp. He had one horrid practice. But I watched him on Friday. I sat there and watched him win a joint scrimmage on Friday against the Denver Broncos in a practice scenario, cut up the Denver Broncos defense. on Friday. Now, it didn't translate to the game. I get that.
He had a red jersey on, right?
Right. He did have a red jersey on, but still.
And that first interception
which goes to the point of this is the first time you've been in a game where you know you could get hit.
Right.
Right. That's the mental hurdle that you're going to have to overcome as a quarterback. I just think we're putting, from an expectation standpoint, we're putting a ton on him because he got paid. I get that. Mm-hmm. But I think right now, as far as that one performance, you have to also remember this is the Broncos' third preseason game. So it was their second preseason game, the first one he played in. So the Broncos are ahead from a defensive standpoint of planning. What they put in, mm-hmm. planning, also the blitz stuff that they brought.
I'm going to go back to Kawhi Leonard and what I felt like we learned from Kawhi Leonard. Things leak for a reason. If people don't want information out there, it doesn't come out there. So, again, somebody throwing five interceptions in practice, you normally don't hear about it. They throw two, you don't hear about three. Someone wanted this information out there, and it got out there. I'm not sure how.
Well, the practices are open, and so he went five straight plays in a row where he threw
interceptions. That's unprecedented.
And all that.
That's hard to do if they do
that in Pee Wee. I mean, that's really – and so I just think that discussion, and then when I start hearing veteran reporters like a Peter Schrager start mentioning, you know, they can get out of this deal. You know, they really like Nicky Mullins.
But think about this. If he didn't have that bad game, you wouldn't have heard about the interceptions.
No, we heard about
it. No, we heard it before.
Yeah. Let me help you out here. Look, James, me and you.
I'm trying to help you.
Hey, look, I know.
This is not time to panic to me. I gotta help my point, bro, right?
I've been away from the game for a long time, so help me out here. Is 0.0 a good passer rating or a bad one? Yeah, that part. You know why? You never want to see somebody who has $127 million on the books, and he throws for a 0.0. No way, no how. Like, you got to get a back.
Preseason game number three, if he comes out and cuts it up, then I want you guys to come in here and give it a public apology right here.
I have no problem because I'm going to say this thing. When he went 5-0, I was singing his praises. Right. I was giving him the money, love him. I watched those games. Yeah. I was and people can say, oh, there were teams that didn't care, didn't take San Francisco seriously. No, I watched him and was impressed. But then he got paid. And I've seen people change after they get paid. I've seen them like, that's the finish line, not the start line. And again, so we don't know what this dude is made of. What we do know, and we blame Tom Brady, but what we do know is Bill Belichick let him go. Mm. And I haven't seen Bill Belichick let too many guys go that can really play.
Well, the thing for me
Chandler Jones?
Well, no. A lot of defensive players.
Mayo.
A lot of players. Richard Seymour.
We keep going.
There's a lot of players. Yeah. I don't want to go to that part.
Yeah. Who's quarterback that got benched? Who's that guy? Best quarterback in football?
Drew Bledsoe, $100 million man.
Come on now.
All right. New information deserves a new assessment. So I will change with the wind with Jimmy G, specifically because I can't trust his body of work. Typically, when you have a guy with a body of work, a resume, you lean towards the resume even during down times when they hit a rough patch. When he hits a rough patch, it might be telling. It might be defining of who he really is. And the rough patch didn't start last night. It didn't start post-injury. Mm-hmm. It started before the injury. We have to take that into consideration.
He didn't have enough time before the injury to try and get out of that rough patch. Maybe he could have got out of it. You haven't seen that either. That's a possibility.
He's thrown 361 passes in his career. That's like Matthew Stafford half of a regular season. Like, 8 games of Matthew Stafford is this guy's entire body of work. So when you grade them, not how you want to, but how they will, how the real assessment will come based on that contract and based on 361 passes, I don't know why we're leaning positive. We don't know. It's a question mark, and everything you do is going to be a new
I'm not definition. Leaning positive. I'm just not leaning negative. I'm not saying it's time to panic and throw everything out the window. You want to go ahead and throw him to the dogs and see what
$127 million? The cages are open. You know that.
They can't get out of it till after this, next
this,
year anyway.
This looks like a bigger Matt Flynn deal. Mm. And, you know, Matt Flynn had less work. He didn't have 8 games or whatever, but I'm sorry. And again, I loved him during that 5-0 stretch. I agreed with their decision to pay him. Mm-hmm. I thought he was can't miss. I see a guy now, the first two games last year, 2.5 games, it wasn't the same. And you know, look, I think Kyle Shanahan did a terrific job with Matt Ryan, but you know, I saw him struggle with Donovan McNabb, and you can blame that on Donovan McNabb. I wasn't the biggest Kirk Cousins guy. I thought he put up numbers, but I didn't think they were winning. And so, you know, he's allegedly built his reputation off Kirk Cousins and still in love with Kirk Cousins. I just don't think Kyle Shanahan's infallible. And I don't know if this is going to be an easy fix. The guy's got a banged up knee, and he's got a bunch of money in his pocket. And, you know, he's comfortable running around with porn stars.
I don't mind that part. what did Nino Brown say in New Jack City to G Money? Don't be worried about who I with the keep your mind on the money. Stay focused on what's more important.
I will tell you this though.
A lot of great players have messed around.
He is an elite level thrower of the football. He really is. His talent level is great. Now, does everything else? I mean, we've seen a lot of James Harrison got cut a bunch of times.
Oh yeah.
We've seen a lot of guys that have elite level talent level that can't play. And then we've seen guys that have worked their butts off and become Hall of Famers.
The Antonio Brown saga continues to drag on. Brown showed up and practiced with a regular helmet today. Mm. Even still, the diva receiver has now reportedly filed another grievance with the league, and he's also decided to appeal to a power greater than the NFL, tweeting, quote, "Call God. When the world is against you, look at the sky. God is with you." All right, look, my opinion on this is that Antonio Brown doesn't really have the same passion for football. Mm. I said this yesterday. I think when you lose that passion, you start looking for reasons why not to do things rather than why you can. This whole helmet thing is a smokescreen. The guy doesn't really have the same passion or the passion that made him one of the greatest receivers of all time. That's been diminished. I just don't think the passion's there for him to play football like it used to be.
I wouldn't question his passion. Not a fan of people who question immeasurables. I've always witnessed that being a player and now being up here at this desk, when you question something that has no answer, you can't even measure it. Does he have the passion for the game? Does he still have the heart for it? Can he stomach the rigors of everyday process? Man, shut up. You know why? Because all I want you to do is look at my resume. And I'm talking about, what is it, 6 years, 100 catches, 1,200 yards, and no one ever has done that. So if no one's ever done that, I wonder what their passion looks like, or at least their talent level. This is a guy, as last seen on a football field, was amazing. I don't care how he was in terms of his internal makeup, because we'll never know that assessment, but if your game speaks as loudly as his, I'm not going any other place to look for where your desires are.
Yeah, as far as his passion is concerned, I mean, the guy is a great football player. So I'm not going to go, like, he gets on the football field and you talk to anybody, you know him better than I do. I mean, I don't even know him. But, you know, talking to guys that played for the Steelers, there's nobody from a work ethic standpoint, when he's on the practice field, there ain't nobody that has more passion or works any harder than him.
No, he skipped his last NFL game.
Well, I understand.
He didn't play.
He got suspended. He skipped the practice and got suspended from his last NFL
game.
That's
a sign that you don't want to play when you start.
Well, listen, has he become an –
That was a misunderstanding.
Right. Has he become an issue?
Oh, he didn't know they were going to practice the day before the game?
not necessarily. if you're being told something and – you do that thing that you're being told that you're allowed to do, and then it's not what exactly you understood it to be, and now that is the repercussion.
Decode that. I know what you're saying, though. But
then, that's what it is.
So Mike Tomlin miscommunicated something to him or misled him on something? Mm.
From what I understand is AB had a different understanding of the communications that they had and what was going to transpire.
Oh, kind of like the misunderstanding he has with the NFL about his helmet. Yeah. He's the common denominator in misunderstandings.
Okay, I mean that's true, but I mean to question his passion is nobody that I know is more passionate about this game. This man puts in more hours than anybody that I've seen getting prepared to play this game.
He talked about retiring because he didn't have the helmet. And you think his passion is equal to Tom Brady's?
He didn't retire.
He thought about it.
He didn't think about it. Listen, I'm gonna go out here and I'm gonna throw something out there and see if I could get what I want, get it my way. It didn't work.
Mm. Yeah.
So now I had to eat my words, and now anything I say that is retirement based now is just a empty threat.
Right.
Well, I responded to him on Twitter. He didn't get back to me.
Not yet. It's coming.
I didn't respond to him. I thought I would get blocked, but I didn't. Because here's what my response to, when the world's against you, you look to the sky, God is with you. That was his tweet. I said, the world isn't against you. The world wants you to see you play. You are not a victim, Antonio Brown. You've been blessed by the hand of God with amazing abilities. Honor those blessings and find a damn helmet and dazzle us with your brilliance, right? And he found a damn helmet today. Maybe he just listened to me. Maybe he just listened to me. I love watching the guy play. I don't like all the extracurricular. And there will come a day when your problems outweigh your productions. And you know what? He's going to be looking for work when that day comes. But right now, that dude is a freak show when it comes to athletic ability and talent.
Mark, what I hear your response saying is, like, you're leaning into being a victim rather than leaning into being the great player. And to me, when someone starts leaning into victimhood, that screams their passion is gone, their belief in themselves. I'd rather be a victim than go out here and hunt like a lion is supposed to. Again, I just don't have a lot of tolerance for grown, healthy men that see themselves as victims. I always reference my father, ultimate lion. Grew up in a time and an era where he was really hunted, and guys like him were really hunted. Never a victim, always on the hunt himself. And so I just don't have a lot of tolerance for AB and this whole victimhood. Oh, they won't let me wear my helmet. All this other, the problems he had with Mike Tomlin. We sit here and complain all the time about black coaches. And this dude, one of the best players, supports your black coach. He didn't do it. He made a fool out of Mike Tomlin. Now he's over here in Oakland making a fool out of John Gruden.
Okay.
Okay. Passion's not there.
I'm with you. That topic bar doesn't say anything about this victimhood. We can switch lanes, but I'm gonna say back.
Mark brought it up.
No, I respect that. We can go there because it's a different world. That's why a lot of these celebrities, entertainers are feeling victimized because they're just not used to the constant.
They've been emasculated, but go ahead.
That is a good conversation. We'll have that the next day. Let's talk about this though. His passion, catching bricks in church shoes, man. Do you remember that video? You can't do that unless you all in, brother. This dude is so all in, and it translates on the field. Work ethic, second to none. His numbers, second to none, the trajectory. And what comes into play now is what's around him. He's not fear-based, and I like that. I applaud someone who's like, look, I don't give a damn how this is going to end. Right now, on my terms, I want things a certain way. Look, I wish he were bought into the team concept and considered others in that process, but he has the hammer. So, as you always say, when you have the hammer, swing it, brother. Here's
the deal, and this is the thing that bothers me. You know, the victim, you can talk about whatever you want to talk about with him. He's been enabled to be that because of his talent. Yeah. So part of that is the lack of organizational structure and intestinal fortitude from the organization to say, we ain't going to put up with this. The thing that really bothers me more than anything else is that he operates as an independent contractor. And when you operate as an independent contractor, you know what? You're not sold out for your team. And independent contractors don't win championships. Independent contractors can put up, they can make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. They can put up a lot of numbers. But I come from a world where it's about others first, and it's about the team concept, and it's about winning championships. Mm. And that's the thing that makes me sad for him, because he is exceptional. I mean, exceptional. You can make an argument that he's top one or two or three receivers in all of football. Mm-hmm. He's exceptional. And I would love to see him understand the team concept and to see where that could take him, because that is so, like, you look at Super Bowl rings, James.
It's a little bit of a different era right now,
right,
too.
I understand you look at
social media, everybody wants the followers, they want the likes, and that's what guys are coming into the league.
At the end of the day, the guy who has the most likes and Twitter followers, you know what happens to him? He dies. That guy dies. We all die.
No question.
You know, and you know what? You're going to have the most Twitter followers. That means nothing.
I'm
having that championship, you have one. You have, right? Man, that ring, you know what that ring means? Sorry, Marcellus. That, you know what that ring means?
You got a ring, Marcellus? You got a couple. Yeah,
no, didn't even want one. Didn't
you
care.
Want one? I can
no,
give you one.
You know what? No, I don't, actually. And look, I wasn't an AB-level player, had my moments, but I will say this. Everyone's ultimate goal is not getting a ring. I respect what you said.
I get
you. But look, when you 7, 8, 12 years old, not everybody's saying Super Bowl catch. Somebody is saying, I need money to get us out this situation.
I understand
And we
that
need
too.
To respect those guys as well.
I understand.
He putting up money in numbers.
No. Having won a Super Bowl? And you not having won one, would I give up half my money to get a Super Bowl if I didn't have one right now? I would.
Shoot, not even a question. It's not.
I would.
I wouldn't give up.
That's just me. That's my. That's for the game. That's what I. That's my. You know how much I was into it.
No.
And I want to. I just want to say this because Mark's made a point, and Mark, I'm about to put words in your mouth, but this is where I think you're saying when AB starts saying call God and bringing God into the deal. Then you start, are your actions in alignment with God? What you going to call God and tell him, here's how we're going to do it? Or has it been laid out for you that what Mark is saying, again, the godly action is like concern for others. That's the approach. If you're going to bring religion into this, let's make sure your message is consistent. And it's just not. He's a selfish narcissist who's totally into AB, and not about others and the team. And it's offensive to me. And I think it speaks to his lack of real passion. There's a lot of immature passion that people have. I have some immature passions. I'm probably gonna hit a drive-through window when this show's over because of my immature passion.
Shut it down.
James Harrison is back with us. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst Mark Slare.
Yeah.
Let's move to Pittsburgh, where the Steelers are looking for a fresh start this year after a tumultuous season that led to the departure of Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. But one Steelers legend, Rod Woodson, doesn't put all the blame for the team's drama on their departed divas. Woodson said he thinks Big Ben needs to take more responsibility when things go wrong and had an even stronger message for Mike Tomlin saying, quote, the only thing I would like to see him do more is have a little more thumbs down on his players. It's like having 53 teenagers. If you got 53 teenagers, you're not gonna let your teenagers just run the roost in your house. If they do something wrong, you have to discipline them in some type of manner to catch their attention. All right, Marcellus, we'll start with you. Whose leadership needs to improve the most, Big Ben or Mike Tomlin?
I'm just laughing at first. I'm glad the kids are now teenagers in Pittsburgh. They're maturing before our eyes this entire offseason. Amazing. Y'all crazy out there. It's Big Ben. It's obvious. Because no matter what Mike Tomlin creates in terms of culture, it's all about the enforcers. It's all about day one at practice. It's all about the team leaders, whether you're the best player or you're a guy that everyone just gravitates towards. When you go out there and put your work in, that's the guy who's the enforcer. We all know with Belichick and his greatness, because of Tom Brady enforcing this Patriot way. You go to other sports, you can see it, Tim Duncan, Popovich, you can see even with Steve Kerr and Steph Curry. I saw it personally with Junior Seau. The dude had the talent of being a Hall of Famer as he is and one of the greatest linebackers ever, but had the mindset of the 53rd man just trying to make it. And when you see that in leadership and in action, all of a sudden everyone falls in line. That's not happening in Pittsburgh, and I think it starts at the top, and the top on the field is Big Ben.
No, it starts at the top with Mike. He has to be the one that sets an example so everyone can see that this is how I'm going to deal with this person, and this person is at this level. So if I'm dealing with that person and they're such a high level, you know I'm going to deal with you the same way. He has had the most prolific offense over the last whatever 2-3 years that he's been there. And they haven't done what they should have done, or we hadn't done what we should have done. Right now, he has built a defense that right now, I think last year they ended up 6th, number one in sacks. Mm-hmm. That defense is comprised of nothing but first and second rounders, and right now guys that he has brought in. So he has exactly what he wants. I think it's only two guys on that defense that are outside of the second round. One is Javon Hargrave, who actually had 8 sacks last year, and the other is Vince Williams. So right now, he has to coach and get everything, all the potential out of his players that he has and get them to go out there and perform. That's what I feel.
I'm with you on the Mike Tomlin aspect. I think both need to increase their leadership, but you have to hold guys accountable. When you're the head coach, you have to hold guys accountable. The responsibility of the quarterback is to deflect 100% of the credit when things go well and accept 100% of the blame when things go poorly. Ben Roethlisberger is one of those guys, or has been one of those guys. I'll admit he did it. And he's done it on his radio show. He's done that on his radio show.
Yeah. I'll say this. He has done that on his radio show, and that's where the issues and the problems really start off.
But
in post-meetings, in post-interviews, after games, he puts it all on his
show. That's nothing.
I get you.
That does nothing.
But what I'm saying is, like, the coaches that I played for, he'd blow somebody up on his radio show one time, and he'd get called in and say, if you ever do that again, like, that you got to put your foot down as the head coach and say, you cannot be that guy. And that to me, is completely on Mike Tomlin.
Yes.
You've got to be better with your players. You've got to set a standard. And, you know, the culture is something that's worked on every day in every organization. And you guys know I'm a big landscaper. Culture is like water, irrigation. And water will find the path of least resistance. So when your lawn, you're watering it, if you've got a high spot, the water will go around the high spot, and that high spot will be yellow. And for me, from a cultural standpoint in an organization, if you let things slide, that culture finds the path of least resistance. What's easiest for me? I'm going to go that direction. That's on Mike Tomlin.
Boom.
I'm going to give you a more personal analogy that fits for you. I think a head coach is the DJ. And the DJ controls the dance floor.
Damn right.
And there will be a best dancer that might make, no, we're going to do the electric slide. Everybody, come, we're going to do the two-step. And Ben's the best dancer.
Yeah.
But the guy that sets the tone is the DJ. Mm. And that's Mike Tomlin, the head coach. Because, Marcel, does the DJ not control the dance floor? He controls the entire party.
He does, but I don't know what era you dancing in, because, boy, you showed your age with them dances. You have been, what the hell? 1985, the Roxy or something. Oh, no, respect. Look, I'm not in total saying it's on Ben. I say it's in conjunction. But I do know when there are 53 guys out there and the coaches said, this is what we do, we need someone to do it. And that responsibility and that accountability really comes from us doing this as a collective. But there is a head and there is a lead. Every team I've been on, whether it was me as the leader or someone else I looked up to, a Bruce Smith, a Junior Sal, they set the tone. No matter what we heard in meetings, when we went out there, the tone was set by those guys because their treatment and their connection to the culture and the organization was just different. You think the 53rd guy is going to sit there and say, you know what? Man, Ben's out here just getting it in and working hard, but I'm a chill. If Ben is making sure everyone is on the same playing field, everyone has to do it, and it's an easier task than if Tomlin just says it.
The head coach has to do that, man. The head coach has to do that. Because if everyone is not on the page, if I tell you to do something and I watch you do it, or I watch you not do it, I need to come to you and tell you need to do this.
How come there,
get it done.
But Big Dog, how come there wasn't a Browns way when Belichick was there, but there's a Patriots way? It's because he got somebody to finally say, I'm going to make sure.
The Patriot way is the Patriot way because Bill Belichick makes it the Patriot way.
But he was.
And Tom follows through with it.
Just the same dude that was in Cleveland.
Tom follows through with it.
There.
I was there, dude.
James. I've been told by multiple Patriots players that Tom Brady will take a butt chewing in a meeting from Bill Belichick. He is allowing himself.
He is not.
You just
not
said missing. It. Boom. He allows it.
Right.
But is Ben allowing that? Is the conversation that we're having
but
right
you've
now?
Got, but you've got to listen. As when the coach, GM, you've got to demand it.
No, exactly. No. Because when your authority figure and Tolbert and others who are sitting there saying Ben is the guy, you don't have complete control of personnel. So Tomlin. So guess so what? They undermine his power.
As a head coach, he doesn't have the power that Ben has.
In your situation, you were in Pittsburgh, but I'm saying from this vantage point, Ben's a little too close to Tomlin.
If that was the case, when I was in Pittsburgh and I wasn't playing, I know for a fact Ben wanted me to play, but I didn't. So, obviously, the head man has all the power.
Don't do me like that. I don't know those details.
What are we talking about?
I don't know those details.
And you saying Ben has power.
No. But Jay, that's a hell of a point. But I will say this, and you know better than all of us sitting here. I do think the Steelers front office has a culture that favors the players a tiny bit more than others. And they believe, hey, we've hired three coaches. We know these coaches, anybody that comes into our organization as a coach is gonna have success. They, I think, tend to value the players a little bit more than maybe other franchises.
He said, I would say Ben is in charge.
Maybe in previous, like, head coaches with maybe, not even Cowher. I couldn't say that, dude. I could not say that. The head coach is the guy.
I think their organizational structure is, hey, we're going to appoint you the head coach. We're going to empower you to be the head coach. Go be the head coach. Now, that's up to you. If you want to establish that power, I don't think they circumvent the power of the head coach.
No, I got to end with this. Kevin Colbert said there are 52 kids under Ben Roethlisberger. He didn't say, give him respect. 53 kids under Mike Tomlin. Come on, man. Right. You already know how this is working out.
Whitlock and Wiley, Mark Slareth is back. Let's move to Cleveland. Sponsored by the Capital One Venture Card, what's in your wallet? Where the he said, she said over Baker Mayfield's comments in GQ, in which he questioned the Giants drafting quarterback Daniel Jones, continues. Baker doubled down on the claim. His words were taken out of context, explained that he defended himself because the alleged quotes reflected poorly on his character. He also added, quote, if I have a problem with someone, I will say I have a problem with someone. That is true. Baker Mayfield's not afraid to put a name on it, which adds credibility to his contention that his comments were taken out of context. Question here is, respect Baker backpedaling here on the Daniel Jones criticism?
I really do. I really do, because we know he likes to smoke. And like you said, and coaches used to always say, if y'all gonna clown and criticize, names and numbers. Put it by the criticism that you're making. This is a guy who says, in his ego right now, this is amazing, because we all know he could be a guy that could put up the wall and just say, you know, I say what I said, take it at face value. But he cares, not just about football, not just about his teammates, but his teammates outside the locker room, which is the fraternity. And he's like, man, don't do this. Like, he, in his heart of hearts, is thinking, y'all are making me look like somebody I am not. I'll take all the heat from things that are authentic to me, but not this one. This was disingenuous in terms of how you put it out there in context, so I'm going to clear this up as best as possible. I respect it.
I don't think you can take it out of context. I mean, I don't think it's out of context. He said, I couldn't believe they took him. My mind was blown. You said it. It is what it is. I don't think there's full context to it. It could be a longer conversation, but I respect the fact that he reached out. I respect the fact that he said, hey, listen, man, whatever I said, you know, I didn't mean any harm by it. You know, I apologize for it, but I tell you what, the backpedal right now, he backpedals any faster, he can be playing free safety.
He's so
because
stupid.
he is rolling right now. I mean, he's just, I respect the fact that when you screw something up, and I understand that things sometimes don't have full context to them when they get printed. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that before. So I totally understand that point. But I'm glad that he reached out and said, I'm sorry.
Here's what I will hope someone gets this to Baker, what I'm about to say. What he has to understand, and this is why people like Colin Cowherd, myself and others are like, hey, man, tone it down a little bit. Because if you become a lightning rod, like me, like Cowherd,
right. Like
Marcellus, mm-hmm. in his comments about Jay-Z and Colin Kaepernick, when you become a lightning rod, people are going to take you out of context.
Yeah.
People are going to take your polarizing statements and start adding their spin on it. That's what lightning rod, and that's why it's good to be a lightning rod in these chairs. We're not NFL quarterbacks. When you become an NFL quarterback, it's not a lightning rod job. You don't want to be struck by lightning. You don't want that smoke constantly around you. And I'm just telling you, Baker, if you're going to keep talking and talking and talking and controversial, writers are going to take you out of context and put their spin on your comments, and you'll be backpedaling the rest of your career.
Right. They won't give you full context.
Yeah.
Like the writing, I mean, you're a journalist. You're not taking out of context, but it won't be in full context.
The only thing I'll say, Mark, because I'm a critic of the media.
Uh-huh.
Not everybody in the media is honest. And a lot of times people get taken out of context intentionally. Okay. And it happens. It's happened to me. Mm-hmm. It's happened. It's commonplace now in today's drama.
I was told when I was on the rise, when I was getting like all the media attention, and they were pointing them out, some of the big dogs on my team, like, not him, not him. He'll do you wrong. And it was accurate because I saw it occur. Context is not just physical. It's emotional. It could be just in terms of the script. Right. So if you look at Daniel Jones and you're looking there in criticism and grading him, and you say, I can't believe they took him. That's one connotation, which is bad.
Yeah.
But what if you're taking it like I took it in shock? Like, I can't believe they took him. Boom. That lands completely different. And that's the same thing that happened with Baker Mayfield. When he went number one overall, I was like, Baker Mayfield went number one overall. Glad I wasn't doing an interview. Because somebody would take that and say, I'm going down with it. When I'm like, I didn't think they were going to go with him. I thought they were going with Sam Darnold or someone else. It's a damn shame, but that's how it goes.
Sometimes your words, your spoken words, when they get put on paper, are completely different. And I was joking around on a radio show in New York, and I was giving Eric Decker all kinds of grief on this radio show between me and this host. Eric wasn't there. It's the only time in this business, 19 years, where I've called up to apologize to somebody. Because the reporter, the newspaper, the Post, put it down, said they were, I mean, we were joking around, we were goofing around. They didn't say any of that. They gave no context to it, and it made me look like a complete and total jerk.
And so, Marcellus,
the one time I did it.
To further elaborate on your point, which was excellent, if Baker did say, man, I can't believe they took him number one, and then the reporter asked a follow-up, why? Oh, well, because, you know, he didn't win that much at Duke. Mm-hmm. You know, winning really mattered. Mm-hmm. Again, that's totally different than if there is no follow-up and he's like, man, they took him number one. He didn't win at Duke, blah, blah.
Right.
Reporters do it all the time.
Yeah, and you're one of the top journalists, so you know the tricks of that trade.
Yes.
And look, I don't care how many media classes we take as active players and Journalism 101, we have that once a year meeting.
Yeah, I can't believe they took him number one. Could be like, man, I'm so excited for him. I talked to him, like I threw with him at this camp or whatever. We came up together. Like, you could be totally like geeked up for. I can't believe they took him. This is great. You know, he's a buddy of mine.
I love it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And again, I want to be clear. Clay Skipper, that wrote the story, maybe he got it all accurate. What I would just suggest to Baker is, if you're not a lightning rod, when people do exploitive things to you. In your words, people are less likely to believe you. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, Baker wouldn't say that. Right. But when the narrative is, oh, Baker would say that, people believe it.
Uh-huh.
And so I would just tone it down, play a little bit more, and let your play do the talking for you. Before we go further, I'd like to address the gifts that were supposed to be awaiting Anthony Davis upon his arrival in Los Angeles. Kawhi Leonard comes to mind first. The Ennis Prime superstar small forward was supposed to team with Davis to be the future of the Lakers. Well, Kawhi signed with the Clippers. How about Tyronn Lue, the championship-proven head coach, the one guy with a reputation for standing up to passive-aggressive diva superstar LeBron James? Well, T. Lue signed on to be the Clippers associate head coach. Oh, how about the jersey number 23, the number AD has worn throughout his 7-year NBA career? As a welcoming gift to the Lakers family, LeBron James surrendered the number to his young protege. Only he didn't. LeBron's Nike overlord said AD would have to wait until next year for that. Okay, Boogie Cousins, the big man AD played with in New Orleans. The big man who was going to guarantee that AD didn't have to get his body brutalized playing the five. Well, Boogie tore his ACL and will miss the season. Safe to say, the Grinch stole Anthony Davis's Christmas, and the Lakers stole AD's $4 million trade kicker, too. I bring this up because AD has every right to be irate with the Lakers, his agent Rich Paul, and his new teammate LeBron James. He was promised a super team with lots of load management opportunities. He was promised a path to a championship. Instead, he's starring in the NBA's zaniest reality show, Desperate Title Chasers, and Dwight Howard is about to be a surprise addition to the cast. In order to make good on their promise that AD won't be the Lakers' starting center, the Lake Show is allegedly preparing to bring back D12. This is like when MTV kicked Puck off season 3 of The Real World San Francisco and then brought him back for the Real World reunion. Mm. Nothing changed. Puck was still a major headache and annoyance. Adding Howard to this team proves the Lakers are more reality show than title contender. At this point, why not add Carmelo Anthony to the cast? I got an even better idea. Add Colin Kaepernick and Antonio Brown. Mm. Lure Dennis Rodman out of retirement. When a reality TV show goes stale, the solution is to add more combustible personalities. We already know how this season the Real World Lakers is going to end. its two biggest stars, both LeBron James and Anthony Davis, will depart the series. All right, Jim Jackson's back with us. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Yeah.
Is Lakers' interest in Dwight Howard proof their season will be a failure?
No, not at all. The loss of Boogie Cousins can't be exaggerated. Remember, the odds in Vegas didn't change. Remember, that was a low-risk, high-reward situation, just like Dwight Howard would be. He's obviously, of all the options, the best candidate for this situation. Dwight Howard, yeah. All right. NBA executive says right here, it's a high-reward situation. He's the best available prospect for them to go. This is a 17-12 guy coming off his second spinal surgery. Now, his first one was the last time we saw him in a Lakers uniform, and people were hypercritical of him, and we all know the dynamic between him and Kobe Bryant wasn't the best, but he still put up buckets, and he was hobbled that year. I think Dwight Howard would come in and give you something in the same range as we saw 2 years ago when he was healthy, 17-13. That's who Dwight Howard is, and that's what the Lakers need.
But you're not expecting Dwight, if you bring him in, to play 35 minutes, okay? Somewhere between 15 to 20, 25 minutes, if you bring him in to play that, whatever Boogie's role is. But the headline should say, is the Lakers' interest in Dwight Howard proof that they're trying to keep up with the Clippers? Because that's what it is. Because they have to be able to fill the void in regards to where they're at against their rival who happens to be down the hall. Because moves like this, to me, indicate, I'm not going to say a desperation, but in some aspects a little bit, because now's the time that they have to make a move, because you never know what's going to happen with AD after this year. LeBron is still on the back end of his career, and to compete, they're going to need to compete now. Now, can Dwight, if he's mentally and physically healthy, add value? Yes.
Yes.
If those two things are...
Biggest word in the dictionary. Biggest two-letter word in the dictionary.
But that's what I'm saying. If. And as a general manager, okay, in an ownership, you have to take all of this in consideration, knowing that you had him before and what happened. Okay, so you're taking a big risk in regards to chemistry and how it affects it. Now, you can always get rid of Dwight if something doesn't work out.
But what happened before, Jimmy? Expound. Because that was Kobe Bryant.
No, but it was a bad mix from the beginning.
Because
of Mike D'Antoni.
There you go.
Yeah, that was just a bad mix. There's no way Pau Gasol and Dwight Howard were going to fit together in that system with Mike D'Antoni.
No.
So you were expecting something out of him that he couldn't give you.
And he was hurt.
Y'all honestly think adding Dwight's personality to this pressure cooker, LeBron James desperate to get one
what
more
was different between what was Boogie's personality? Boogie has some of the same questions in regards
as
to
Dwight
that.
Howard.
No, personality-wise?
Personality-wise, you would put Dwight and Boogie on the same level.
I'm saying they had personality questions. I'm not saying it's the same. You talk to people coming out of Sacramento about Boogie, it wasn't all flying colors. He was able to diminish a lot of that in New Orleans and also Golden State, but you had some questions before. But the surroundings in Golden State allowed Boogie to say, you know what? Let me chill. And he grew and matured a little bit. Now, I'm going to say this. Your boy Dwight said he came out and he matured. He looked at what Kobe said about him, not really taking the game serious, not loving the game back then, personal. But as he's gotten older, now he understood what he meant by it. So could it work? It doesn't hurt.
He's a different man, too. Dwight Howard got undressed by scandal. Let's just be real about that. That humbles you. Two, and it narrows your focus. Two, the fact that he comes back to a situation where those variables don't exist. D'Antoni's not here. Kobe's not here. That dynamic, that pressure is different. And if he's committed, then you could deal with the part of his personality that is laughable, the part of his personality that is going to smile and bring levity when it's still a heavy situation. So I think that LeBron is knowing that I got to get value out of that position because JaVale McGee is there, and then you're going to force Anthony Davis to play the five more so than he wants to. That's not ideal.
Yeah, he don't want to do that.
When's the last time we've seen Dwight Howard
healthy?
Play an important game of basketball? When's the last time we saw that? When's he been in games that matter?
So Charlotte doesn't count a couple years ago.
He's been just jumping around team to team. I can't see it.
What's the downside? Give me the downside.
Oh, he's just another combustible part added to a very combustible car or team or whatever. To me, all right, let me ask you, let me squeeze this in before we go. Do you think LeBron and AD will both be here next season?
Is LA still in California?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But damn it, yeah, they're going to be here. I'm telling you, the attraction for LeBron James, at least, was greater than basketball. He said this, so why don't we believe the man in his own words? Like,
because he expected to win as well, and he's not going to.
Oh, it's the same guy who says, I have nothing else to prove. The same guy who says, I'm already the GOAT. Now he needs to go and chase something. I think he wants it all to come to him.
AD's going
to
be here, too?
I don't know about that. That's Chicago comment. What? That's Chicago comment.
I know, right? And he answered it quick, too. Oh, that'd be good. I mean, you know. I don't, you know, yeah. AD is a situation too where it's funny because he got promised certain things, and I know in the deal in which he came and things didn't work out that way. But a lot is going to be dependent on what happens this year. Now, I'm not saying they have to win a championship for AD to have to buy all in, but how the organization works internally, how they fare during the regular season and postseason, those are determining factors to me of what AD and Rich Paul is going to look at, because it's going to be Rich Paul right in that room making that decision with him on what he does for his future, to me.
You know what? This reminds me of years ago, the couple of women I probably should have married, and I made promises. I made promises about what I was going to do. I was going to do that. Baby, I'm going to work out every day. I'm not going to be stubborn. I'm going to compromise.
Right.
None of it comes true.
Hell no.
None of it.
And it lasts about as long as an NBA season. Both of them. Married great guys, got kids, great families.
Yeah.
All the promises I wouldn't keep, somebody else did keep. AD going to be out of here.